hello and welcome back, you absolutely amazing roadmen. We're back for the A1 show. Today I want to talk about a topic that I'm getting a lot of requests for. It's a little bit off the kilter that we've been doing for the last few weeks. I'm going to talk about power meters, how do they work, these complex, expensive little pieces of plastic and metal that we strap onto our bikes. How do they work? What's the benefits? What brands should you get? And we'll get one, and just looking at it actually make you faster. I have a suspicion you know what the answer is to that, but I'm going to go through it anyway. It's a show that you're going to get a lot out of if you're currently using a power meter or you're thinking of buying a power meter. Stay tuned for the next 20-25 minutes, and I'm going to talk you through the ins and outs of this complicated little piece of scientific apparatus. Before I get started, I'd just like to talk briefly about our sponsor section. It's the A1 Strength and Conditioning Plan. So if you haven't used the A1 Strength and Conditioning Plan yet, or you haven't heard about it, you've probably got your head under a rock. We launched the A1 Strength and Conditioning Plan about 4 weeks ago, and it's been a blow-away success. When I got started, there was a lot of mistakes made by me. There was a lot of blind alleys I went down. There was a lot of trial and error. And the goal with A1 coaching is kind of based on that quote, you learn from mistakes, but they don't have to be your mistakes. So I wanted to give you guys a way to avoid the long trial and error process that took me down many dark alleyways and wasted much, much time. I want to give you guys a way to avoid that, and that's what I've done with the strength and conditioning plan. Early in my cycling journey, a mentor of mine who was riding for a world tour team at the time, he taught me about the importance of strength and conditioning and the importance of building a strong foundation. The idea being, the stronger you build a foundation, the higher you can build a peak at the top. And core to that was strength and conditioning. He said it didn't matter how much training you'd done on the bike, if you didn't have a strong basis to transfer that power, if you had like a core, like an elastic band, you were just going to waste so much efficiency. You were never going to get that, the muscle that we're working on all the time, being the heart, we're never going to get the capacity of that heart transferred into power on the pedals without strength and conditioning, without building that link. So really simple exercises. Takes about 12 weeks. You do it concurrent to your bike training, twice a week, 2 1-hour sessions a week, 45 minutes to 1 hour a week, and it'll make such a difference to your training. So I'm going to pop a link into that strength and conditioning thing down below. For the podcast listeners, the link, it's a massive sale. It's going to be on $49.95, and I think normally we sell it for upwards of $350. I wanted to get it into the hands of you guys because it's something that's essential. You know, before we start going on talking about power meters, you know, power is one part of the equation, but if you can't transfer that power and the ability to put it into the pedals and the ability to for your muscles to not fatigue, and you see people, you know, we say Shakira, the hips don't lie. If you have those sort of postures, you're just undermining your chances of success. So go check that out. That's the starting point. And with that said, let's get into power meters, because power meters is a quagmire, and I know a lot of people avoid talking about power meters because it makes them feel retarded, and they're like, I just don't feel that smart when I get into talking about equations and maths. And if you're like me, I wasn't brilliant at maths in school, so this is something that doesn't come particularly easy to me, and it's something I had to work on. But I was a super early adapter of power meters. I think when I got started with a power meter, there probably wasn't another 3 cyclists in Ireland who had a power meter. It's a funny story. So I would have been in college at the time, and I was basically doing anything I could, obviously within the legal parameters of the sport, to get better at cycling. And power meter was something I looked into a lot. And, you know, we're just in the era post Lance Armstrong, where this huge industry is built up around Lance Armstrong, and for the first time there's massive economic incentives in making sure he won. So you couldn't just hope that Armstrong arrived in July in good form. It had to be a lot more than that. It had to be a guarantee that he was going to arrive in good form. A parking immorality, what he'd done around performance enhancing illegal substances aside, there was a lot of good sports science in that US Postal team, and they were the first team that really helped push that mainstream awareness of Power Meter, and that was my entry into researching about it and trying to figure out what this tool was. And I'd done a lot of research, and I thought, you know, I need one of these, and they were like €2,000 at the time. And I was like, okay, I'm a student, I work part-time in extroversion, I barely make enough money for bus fare, lunch, and, you know, just general drinking bags of cans on the weekend. How am I going to get money for a Power Meter? So, like anyone, a falsified loan application later. Yeah, sure, Mr. Bank Manager, I need a loan for that car. A falsified bank application later, and I was away. I was the proud owner of an SRM, still one of the market leaders, and I'm going to talk about that later. But that started my journey, and from there, I think that was the catalyst. I never felt I was a talented rider. That was the catalyst for me starting to move up through the ranks, starting to just throw on like huge gains on my threshold season after season. And it was, you know, probably looking back, one of the most important decisions I've ever made, because that single choice, it gave me this whole new direction in my life where, you know, I remember the pride of pulling on an Irish jersey for the first time. I remember, you know, traveling abroad and amazing races and great friendships and setting up A1 coaching. And it's been, you know, it's been an absolute journey, and the Power Meter is one of those real fork in the road moments for me. Right, let's get the nerdy tech bit away, because it's not that important that you understand how it works, but sometimes it does help you with the buy-in to know there's a solid science behind it. So a Power Meter, it's a measure of the work you're doing. So for us to calculate power, power is force by distance over time. Okay, so this is kind of like, because I couldn't make any sense of this, force by distance over time, what does that mean? So this is kind of like, force is just how hard you're pushing on the pedals, and time in this equation is just cadence. So once you start thinking about it like that, it's not actually a very complicated equation as to how we do it. And the how is just, it's strain gauges built into the pedal. They're just little pieces of metal. And I'm going to butcher this for any engineers who are out there listening and actually work with strain gauges. But it's the flex on the strain gauge and the time it takes to return back to its normal pre-force state. And that's measured, and that's what gives us the power reading. And the big reason we use power over, I know heart rate was around for a long time for given training prescriptions, but the big reason we use power instead of heart rate, it's the lag. So if I'm sitting here at my desk recording a podcast, chilled out guy like I am, probably 70 beats sitting here. If I had to sprint across the far side of the room, probably 20 meters for me, sprint, I'll get there, I'll probably be still 70 beats, then I'll stop, then my heart rate will go 80, 90, 120, 130, 140, and the heart rate will catch up. So what we got there is heart rate lags behind effort. So as a coach, if I want to give you 1 minute full gas, how do you do that with heart rate? If I say to you, do a 1 minute effort at 170 beats, you're going to start the effort, you're going to whack it up the hill, you're going to be looking at your heart rate going, oh shit, I'm still at 70 beats. You're going to be whacking it, whacking it, whacking it, and then you're going to finish your effort and your heart rate is going to start coming up. So heart rate lagging behind effort does not make sense for shorter duration efforts. So it makes heart rate a valuable tool for endurance. It makes it a valuable tool in a lot of other ways for helping us figure out economy, efficiency. It's a valuable tool in a bunch of other ways, which I'm not going to get into now, but it is not a valuable tool for those shorter duration efforts where power is king. The real benefits I found about using a Power Meter, one is we're in this big segment culture at the moment with Strava, and it's not always helpful because, you know, I go off to my local hill and I ride and it takes me 8 minutes, and then I do a big training block, 6 weeks, get the head down, nail the diet, and I go back and I do the same hill and it takes me 9 minutes. What have I learned from that? Haven't really learned anything. I've just learned that maybe I had a little bit less tire pressure that day. Maybe my drivetrain efficiency wasn't brilliant. Maybe there was a headwind. Maybe I wasn't as aero. You know, I've learned nothing from that. But if I go and I ride the same 8 minute hill, but I go, yeah, I'm gonna break it down. Instead of it being a 8 minute hill, I'm just gonna make this a, even it's 5 minute test. I'm gonna ride 5 minutes as hard as I can. Now I average 450 watts. Now I'm gonna do my block of training. I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna do the first 5 minutes of the hill again. And now I'm gonna go, okay, I average 470 watts. I have improved. Now that's assuming that I haven't added weight on, because weight is the second variable in this. We use power to weight a lot. Your power can be going up, but if your weight's going up as well, you're not actually getting any faster. So power and weight are two variables we use for measuring sort of improvements and speed and things like that. So the power meter helps us remove that average speed culture of going out and going, did I average 30 kilometers an hour today? Because it's irrelevant if you average 30 kilometers an hour. 30 kilometers an hour into a tailwind, 30 kilometers an hour downhill is very different to 30 kilometers an hour into a wind assisted wind. What's the opposite to assisted? Wind inhibited. That's a nice wind inhibited and wind assisted. It's very different. It's very, very different. I could be 300 watts into the headwind. I could be 150 watts without the headwind, both keeping an average speed of 30. So it helps us to understand that these metrics are flawed and they're not a good way to train. Also, you're going to go faster in races instantly by just owning a power meter. There's very little like the training effect and stuff we're going to get into and how you use it as a tool, but you're going to go faster just by fact of owning one and having it on and learn that small little bit about pacing. Because if I want to ride the local climb, I think the record on it is like 7 minutes, 6:58 or something. If I want to ride that local climb, I know what power I can do for 6 minutes and 58 seconds. So instead of going out at 500 watts and go, maybe I can hold 500 watts all the way up this climb. I know I can't hold 500 watts all the way up the climb, but can I hold 440 all the way up the climb? Yeah, maybe I can hold 440 watts all the way up the climb. So I go out, and instead of sprinting out of the traps, I go out and I sit at 440. And I know that 440 from bottom to top is the fastest I can make it up that climb. This is the argument we're seeing with riders like Vincenzo Nibali, saying that the likes of Team Ineos and Wiggins in particular started this, where they weren't responding to attacks on climbs. They know if it's Col du Galibier, the best I can average up Col du Galibier is 390 watts. So if Nibali attacks at 500 watts, grant, I don't care. I'll just let Nibali ride off 500 watts because he'll lull, he'll go again, he'll stop, he'll start, fits and bursts all the way up, but I'll just be steady as a die. 390 is the power that I can ride from the bottom to the top fastest in, regardless of what everyone else does. So that could be good enough for 15th on the stage, or it could be good enough to win the stage by a minute. So you're giving the very best out of yourself, regardless of what your competition is doing. Also, I think probably the key reason, or one of the key reasons to get a power meter, is as a reference point. It's a testing tool. So if I go and I start a training block, which I did getting ready for Tokyo, my first test is 360 watts, my sort of untrained test. Now I've put down a block when I'm 5 weeks back training. I'll do a test, maybe I'm heading to Girona next week, so I may test in Girona next week and I'll look to have improved on that 20-minute test. So the protocol I do for an FTP test, I like to get out and I like to ride the road. I like to find a hill and I like to hit it pretty hard. I don't like to hit it pretty hard. I like to hit it very easy, but I like to pace it because hitting it very hard is I suppose a grammatical slip up for me there. If I go now to 360 and I know I'm gonna hold 360 to the top, or say for my next test I'm gonna want to improve it, so say 370. I'm not gonna start at 370 on the nose. I like to segment it into five into segmented into 4 or 5 minute sections, and those 4 or 5 minute sections I'll try and negative split all four of them. So I'll start out at 360, then I'll try and bring it up to 365, then I'll try and go to 370, then I'll try and finish out at 375. I'm not going to spring a massive surprise in this test. The only surprise would be if the wheels come off. If at 360 I'm going, oh my god, I can't hold this, instead of going up to 365 for my second 5 minutes, I maybe just try and consolidate and hold the 360, and if I can build in the last quarter a little bit, I do. But if not, you just hang on for dear life. out in the road, field testing, for me, it's the best way. It's easiest for motivation. You have a few corners, so those visual benchmarks. When you're on the bike, on the what bike, 20 minutes, it's pretty grim. It's a lonely place for 20 minutes. You take 95% of that, of your 20-minute test. You plug it into a threshold calculator. Actually, you know what? I'll get a threshold calculator and I'll link it down below. So pop your email in and I'll set it up where you just get emailed the threshold calculator automatically. The threshold calculator is definitely something that it's really good when we get into explaining what the zones are and why zones are important and why it's different to train at different intensities. The threshold calculator will actually save me having to explain some really laborious points where I'm talking about zone one and here's the physiological adaptations you get, zone two and here's the physiological adaptations. I'll include all that, I'll build all that and I'll throw it into the zone calculator and you guys can download that for free. Okay, so you take your 20-minute test, get your 95% of it, ping it into our threshold calculator and that's going to break it down and it's going to give you your zone. So you're going to have your zone one, zone two, zone three, zone four, zone five, and you're going to have an associated physiological benefit you're going to get from training in that zone. So example, if you want to burn fat, build mitochondria, increase endurance, you're going to train in zone one and zone two. So depending on the results you put in, it's going to give you different power levels you need to train at to get those benefits. If you want to increase muscular endurance, it's going to have a zone you need to train in for that. If you want to increase neuromuscular power, it's going to have a zone. If you want to increase peak force, it's going to have a zone. So it's really cool. It just means, I actually put out a blog today, depending on when you're listening to this, but it's on Medium. I'll link the blog as well. I'm giving a lot of links down below. I need to start setting up a show notes page because it's just going to be scattered with links. But the blog down below is talking about the number one training mistake I see people make. And the number one training mistake I see people make is they don't have a power meter. They don't have a heart rate monitor. So what happens is they end up going out and riding kind of hard, kind of the average speed culture. I call it headless chicken riding because they're not going out with a plan. The plan they're going out with, it's kind of cardio rather than cycling. The plan they're going out with is to ride kind of hard. And especially if you're time crunched and you're trying to get this session in before work or after work, what ends up happening is you end up riding in what you'll see when you get this threshold calculator is zone 3. Because zone 1, zone 2 feels too easy. Zone 4 feels unachievably hard. So you gravitate towards zone 3. And there's nothing wrong with riding around in zone 3. In zone 3, you'll get a set of physiological adaptations. But you're not going to get the physiological adaptations from riding in zone 1, zone 2, zone 4, zone 5, zone 6 in zone 3. You'll only get the adaptations associated with zone 3. So if you spend 95% of your time, of your available training time, training one zone and neglecting all the other zones, when it comes time to a race, when it comes time to go and do your Mallorca 312, when it comes time to go and do your Sportif, and you go into the base of a climb and you have to ride in zone 4, your body's in pure shock. It starts building lactate really fast, doesn't know how to clear it because it hasn't encountered it. Another example, when you're 5 hours in and your body's like, oh my God, I'm shutting down because you haven't built enough mitochondria. Mitochondria are like the powerhouses in your cells. You haven't built enough mitochondria for your endurance to last for the day because you haven't spent enough time riding in zone 1 and zone 2. You're screwed. The wheels are going to come off. You're going to fall apart badly. And that's just because you've neglected training in all the training zones. And that's what we do. We build training plans based off your event, so we know what the demands of your event are. If your event is 10 months away, okay, let's look at this. It's a 4-hour, Mallorca 312. A bunch of our clients are doing that. What's the demands of it? It's 312 kilometers. You don't have to train 312 kilometers. I'll get into this a little bit and how we use power as a metric. This could even end up being a 2-part podcast. Let me see how long we've been going. Yeah, we've been going 20 minutes. This could end up being a 2-part podcast. And I'll get into talking about how you actually use. So yeah, no, I'm committing to it being a 2-part podcast because I think it's too much information. We're already on 20 minutes and I want to go through the brands and the types of parameters you buy. So rather than going on and talking about how to use performance manager charts, what's chronic training load, how do we build training plans. But the rough idea here is you take an event like Mallorca 312, and we know the demands of an event like Mallorca 312. We know how many hours it's going to be in the saddle. We know how difficult the physiological toll it's going to be. We know what zones you're going to have to ride in and for how long. So now we need to make sure your training plan reflects time in those zones. So we look at each of those zones like a bucket on your way to your Mallorca 312 goal. And it's like, okay, we need to put enough time into each of these buckets to prepare you for the event. That way we take the guesswork out, and we know when you get to the race, the wheels aren't going to come off. You're not going to fall apart. You know, barring something like you get a stomach bug or you crash, we know pretty much how you're going to get on the event, because we know we've put enough time in your plan where you're going to be doing endurance. We know you've spent enough time in zone 4 for your climbing. You know, we know you've spent enough time in your zone 5 for the really steep pitches where you have to go super deep, but for only 30 seconds or a minute. We know they're not going to ruin you. This is the power of having a power meter, the power of the power meter. Actually, I'm going to segue briefly here because I have something in front of me, which is pretty cool. My girlfriend got me a present, and it's like an egg timer. It's like a 15-minute egg timer. And the idea is you flip it over, and it gives you 15 minutes of time. And I was just reading the box up there before I started. It's really cool. So the idea is, on the side of the box, it's just called 15 minutes. I don't even know where you get this. And the School of Life make it. It says, our lives are so busy and frenetic, we're always forgetting to make time for what really matters. Inside this box is a finely crafted hourglass whose grains of sand measure out 15 minutes. This isn't very long, but that's the point. It's longer than we give to many of the things that are ostensibly think of as important, like properly listening to a partner, rationally analysing our career ambitions, or playing in a concerted way with our child. The hourglass is a tool that prompts us to carve out 15 minutes of time for what truly counts. It creates a floor beneath which it challenges us not to fall. And as the sand flows from one vessel to another, it also looks extremely beautiful. It's a class idea. It's absolutely brilliant. It stops me during the day now. I'll flick it over and go, I'm going to read for 15 minutes. I'm going to meditate for 15 minutes. I'm going to do core work for 15 minutes. It's brilliant. I don't even know how much they are. It's probably a tenner. But they're amazing. I'd encourage you to get one of those. Chuck it on the desk. Okay, let's talk about one other really cool application of the power meter. It's power profiling. So you get your power meter and I say to you, okay, go out, ride 10 seconds full gas, ride 1 minute full gas, ride 5 minutes full gas, ride 20 minutes full gas. And I know your weight. So now I divide the power you can achieve for each of those durations by your weight. And I have what we call a watts per kilogram figure. Now I look at a chart, because we've had hundreds of thousands of people do this since the advent of the power meter. Now I look at your chart and I plot it and I say, ah, okay, Johnny is a Cat 4 10 second power, but he's a Cat 2 on 1 minute power, and then he's a Cat 4 on 5 minute power, and he's a Cat 4 on 20 minute power. And I'm looking at it and going, oh, okay, so Johnny is a Cat 2 on 1 minute power, but he races in Cat 4. So now I can look around at courses around, say we're based in Ireland, and I can go, okay, well, what course has a 1 minute drag, or what course has a 1 minute challenge? And then I can say we can increase Johnny's chances of success, because relative to Johnny's peers, he's a very strong 1 minute power. So now we call this power profiling. So now using a course that has a difficult 1 minute section, and Johnny's tactic for that race becomes, whack it, full gas for that 1 minute section, because other Cat 4s aren't going to be able to follow you, and we statistically increase the likelihood that Johnny is going to win that race, or, you know, achieve separation from the break. It becomes a super interesting tool when we dig a little bit deeper into that. I'm going to dig deeper on how we use it on the next follow-up podcast on this, but I want to talk briefly about brands. Because, like I said, in my falsified student loan application, I ended up paying €2,000 for my SRM. But right now, I'm thinking €500 to €800 is going to get you a lot of value in the parameter market. And actually, before I came on here, I was just looking at a review. DC Rainmaker had it on YouTube. It's an old one, and I've gone to check, and since that, they're actually in production. It's IQ squared, €150 for a parameter. I can't speak to its quality because I haven't used it, but the review looks pretty legit. Might be worth checking out. But I think there's not one best power meter out there. there is a best parameter for your needs and there's a best parameter for your budget. So let me explain. So the different ones that I've had, that I've, you know, have experience with, and it's pretty much, there's some of the newer brands I haven't used, like IQ Squared, but I've used most of them at this stage. Wheelbase Parameter is a very good option. PowerTap, the original pioneers in the parameter market, they're your go-to for this. I think the new hub, it's the G3 hub. You're in that 500 to 800 euro price bracket, depending on spokes you go with, type of rim you go with. And why the wheelbase is very good, it's reliable. We don't have left-right discrimination, which is a little bit of a drawback. So I can't tell if I have a disbalance between my left leg and my right leg. But the best way to actually just get around that is if you have a friend or a gym who has a watt bike, go jump on that. That has left-right discrimination. If you're 48, 52, 49, 51, 50, 50, you don't have any major noteworthy discrimination. So you don't need to worry about a parameter that does left-right balance. You know, in my experience, 95 to 99% of clients I've met have no need for left-right discrimination. So the PowerTap is brilliant for that. It's super easy to change from your time trial bike to your road bike to your cyclocross bike onto your commuting bike, and you have power on everything, because as we'll get into in the next podcast on this, having continuity of your data is super important. The drawback, you're stuck with this one wheel. So if you race and you train on two different wheels, like most of us do, you're going to need two different parameters. You're going to need a race wheel and a training wheel. Bit annoying. And also having a gap in the data, especially from races, is not ideal at all. Pedal-based has emerged in the last couple of years. Companies like Garmin have come out with them. PowerTap also have them. Benefits, easy to move it from one bike to the other. Few accuracy problems. And for me, I've never had a crash where I've smashed a crank. I've had plenty of crashes where I've smashed a pedal. I've even smashed a pedal off the wall, you know, loading bikes in our cars. You have leaned against a wall, bringing it up the stairs to my apartment. I bang pedals all the time. For me, I won't use a pedal-based parameter. The reliability issues, but also just, it's a delicate piece of kit and you're exposing it to a lot of risk. Your pedals are going to hit the ground. Pedals and bar tape hit the ground. Look at your pedals. Bet they're scraped up. If your pedals are scraped up, stay away from this. Crank arm is a very nice way to go at the moment. Companies like Stages are doing a crank arm, and it's possible to swap the crank arm. If assuming you're using the same group set on your training bike and your race bike, it's possible to swap the crank arm across pretty easily. It's a couple of Allen keys. You'll do it in a second. Stages have had issues with water when it rains really heavy. They're reliability is gone. Actually, not the reliability, they stop working and you need to send them back. That is a pain in the ass. Upside of that, Stages have been very, very good at customer service. So they're something I would recommend, having used them. But if you can afford a slightly higher price point, you're looking at kind of the 800 to 1,000 euro mark, it's chain sets. So you're looking at things like Quark, SRM's a bit more expensive. Power to Max, the drawback, very hard to swap over now unless you're, you know, fairly proficient at bike maintenance. It's difficult to swap over, especially with the plethora of bottom brackets we have on the market now. When I was had my SRM between my training bike, race bike and time trial bike, they were all using Octolink bottom brackets. It took 5 minutes to swap it over. Now you're probably BB30, BB Ride, Press Fit, you know, there's so many button brackets out there. It's unlikely all your bikes have the same button bracket. So it's going to be difficult to swap it over. Also a drawback on the chain set is your chain set's not going to match your group set. So I have I've had chain set parameters before, and the chain set won't match your Ultegra or your Durace or whatever you're using, as bit of a drawback. But the crank sets, chain sets are the way to go for reliability. They're the way to go for durability. I think the crank arm is actually the best compromise if I was advising people at the moment. I think a crank arm gives the best bang for the buck. Gives that changeability. It still has the reliability. Few issues, but the customer service is really good. Things I would look out for when you're getting a parameter. I would look out for a company that has good warranty. You're going to have issues. Regardless of what parameter you go with, you're going to have issues. They're a complicated piece of technology. We're out in the elements all the time. So ensure it has good customer service. I touched on the single-sided, the left-right discrimination. If you don't have left-right discrimination, I don't see a problem with going with wheel-based, which has that combined left and right in one, or just a single-sided parameter. And then just a couple of Q factor actually as well is worth talking about. Q factor is the width. So if you go with a pedal-based crank or pedal-based parameter, it can increase the Q factor. That's sort of the width that part that it is. It changes that, so it could bring it out another 10 mil, which can muck at your position a bit. But typically, studies that I've seen, it only mucks with your power output. Like if you're to test on your bike straight after going to a new Q factor, you're going to have impaired results, but after a week or so that normalizes and you'll be back to normal. Also important to just make sure you always run your firmware update. This stuff's changing all the time, so latest firmware update is essential for your parameter to record accurately. And make sure you zero offset it before every ride. Some of them automatically zero offset. It says calibration if you're using a Garmin, or also if you're using a Wahoo. It's not actually a calibration. Calibration is something different. This is just a zero offset. It's like jumping onto the bathroom weighing scales and making sure it actually reads zero before you jump on. Okay, they are some things to really bear in mind before getting a parameter. I'm going to get into it in the next podcast. I'm making this a two-part one. How we use the data. What is training stress? How do we work backwards from our goal? What's chronic training load, acute training load, training stress balance, and really getting the most out of our parameter. So I really hope you enjoyed that. Check the link down below for that strength and conditioning, because that is an essential piece. I'm going to pop those other links I mentioned in the description as well. Thanks for listening, Roadmen, and I'll chat to you in the next one.